everybody, and welcome to another episode of Everything Horror. I am Tess Baker, and I am joined by my other half,
Paul Dolsky.
And tonight we are going to talk about a movie that I was at first very excited to view, and it is called The Call. And the reason why I was so excited about wanting to see this film is because it has Lynn Shay in it and Tobin Bell. And anything that I've watched these two in, I have enjoyed watching. So the fact that these two iconic actor and actress were together in a horror film, I was like, oh my god, this is going to be great. So let's start talking about it.
Yeah, the plot is, in the fall of 1987, a group of small-town friends must survive the night in the home of a sinister couple after a tragic accident brings them to the couple's door. It was also directed by Tim Woodard Jr., and the writer was Patrick Stibbs. And I must say, this is actually kind of nice that it was only one writer. However, though, I wonder if adding one more writer, whether it be a writer or a co-writer, might have helped a little bit more. And we can get into that as well. I'm going to first touch on what Tessa was saying. I was looking forward to this film as well, for the same reason probably as Tessa just mentioned, where Lynn Shay and Tobin Bell together in a film, got to be amazing. Both are great actors of this generation, as I may say. And, you know, I never complained about either work. And, well, that's where we should have been not so excited, I guess. Because as the story unfolds, because basically, so just to give a little bit of what was going on. So Lynn Shay's character, Edith, was basically being harassed by these kids.
She's being bullied.
Bullied.
Yeah, essentially it's the same difference. But anyways, go ahead.
Basically, behind all that, it's just hard because there was just so much stuff going on, and Lynn Shay's character basically acted like she was going to handle it. She was basically telling them to fuck off, and you're going to regret this, and basically, you know, like any angry, bullied person would do, standing up for themselves. But in this case, what they finally hit the final nail in the coffin for her, and she just offed herself. So when Tobin Bell's character, Edward, came into play, he was not a happy camper. However, he was very, babe, do you have a good word for Tobin Bell's character of, like, he wasn't pissed, like, you could tell he was pissed off, but he did it in, like, a way where
He was livid, but he appeared to be so, like, calculated and level-headed and almost, like, scarily calm about it, in a way. He made you feel, like, so, like, unsettled and uncomfortable, even though, like, he didn't appear like he was violent, being aggressive or violent.
Yeah. And I think the crazy part about this is how he got everybody together, especially the new kid who didn't really technically do anything. It's just the fact that he was with the troublemakers when all this went down. So that didn't work good on his part.
Yeah, so the people that he's talking about, the kids that bullied and harassed Edith, their names are Chris, Zach, Tanya and Brett.
Yes.
And Chris is the new kid that basically didn't do anything wrong, but he's pretty much guilty by association at this point.
Basically. Now, I guess this is where we can really start getting into the play here. So basically, Tobin Bell character, as we mentioned, got a D3 in. He didn't show any sort of aggressiveness or any type of violence towards the kids. It was more settled in a way of they had a choice, which was very interesting. All they had to do was go upstairs one at a time and just
make a phone call.
Make a phone call.
And stay on the phone for 1 minute. If they could do that, they were given, what was it? They were going to be given
freedom, basically.
No, not just that. They were going to get paid money.
Yeah.
They were going to get paid $100,000 or something if they could complete the phone call and be on the phone for a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you're probably thinking right now, ladies and gentlemen, is, well, what's the catch? That doesn't sound hard at all.
Exactly. But there's always a catch, isn't there, babe?
There's always a catch in these sort of situations. And I also do want to mention this while it's fresh in my mind. Speaking about Tobin Bell's character, you could tell that he loved his wife, Edith, very much. Lynn Shay's character very much in this movie. He loved her very much. And it's reflected in his actions and stuff. And he is like, well, you guys are going to deny me like my wife's last wishes, or do I, you know, are you going to do it, or do I have to go to the police and stuff like that? So anyways, go ahead, babe.
Well, this is where it basically begins, right? So Tobin Bell makes them basically sort of decide, and then the door finally opens where Zach goes up first. This is where it gets really, really, really interesting. So it's not just a weird phone call. Well, it is a weird phone call, but it's not just like a normal phone call. So
it's a very strange circumstances kind of phone call.
Yeah, which involves a mirror. Basically pointed in a way where it's facing you as you make that call. However, though, this is where I think the fun part really begins, most of it. So when Shay's character returns again, because obviously she isn't finished with the troublemakers. So as Zach makes the first phone call, Lin Shay's character's voice comes back into play here, basically tormenting Zach into realizing that he is no longer in the same house as he originally was, because like now, because of this phone call, which definitely include the mirror as a portal into another dimension, where it acts like Lin Shay brought Zach back into a memory that he just could not overcome.
Yeah, that's right. And basically, what it comes down to is that each person, in the order that was given specifically, Zach, Brett, Chris, Tanya, they had to go up in that specific order and basically had to face their own personal hell.
And in which case, Zach's personal hell was stepping up to his father.
Yeah, he had to face him.
He had to face him. And just so we can put this on the same page too, but Zach and Brett are brothers in this movie as well. So Zach is standing up to the father. However, Brett wasn't really a part of this flashback. And I think that's because since he's the oldest, he was dealing with his own hell from when it was just him as a child, like when it was just him, not before Brett. Now, here's the trick about these personal nightmares. So the trick is you have to pick up the phone in this other dimension, I'm going to say. Because if you don't, well, I guess you're never seen again.
Yeah, and you're basically stuck in your own personal hell.
And that is why you're given a minute.
So, after that, it continues to progress after Zach fails.
Yeah, Zach could not stand up to the father, even though his in the father in the dimension was basically saying, like, hit me, you're such a pussy, like, yeah, and Zach just could not hit his own dad.
He was terrified of him. Like, he was, it was basically like watching him revert to his childlike state, for lack of better wording. He just froze with terror when he saw his father. He just couldn't face him.
And that's basically what made him fail, even though the phone would literally, you know, feet away from him, and all he had to do was just pick it up.
Yeah. And he couldn't do it. So... Well,
part of me, real quick, makes me wonder if Zach even knew the phone was there. Like, I mean, it's not like they were told, like, what to do when they did the call. They just basically, you know, Tobin Bell...
Because that was the catch.
Yeah. Basically, it was survive that minute of a phone call. So, it's like, well, how do you end a phone call? Well, that's the catch. You gotta figure it out. But, yeah, so, I'm sorry, babe. So, as you were saying, it continued with Brett next.
Yeah, it continues with Brett next. Zach's younger brother. And he goes upstairs to make the call, just like his brother did. And he assumes that all is well, and Zach passed, and Zach's outside waiting for him. No. So, Brett goes upstairs, makes the call, speaks to Edith, and gets sucked into his own personal hell, which also has to do with his father. But it's on a much darker note than Zach's, unfortunately. Brett was subjugated to all sorts of abuse by his father. And if your mind is going to a dark place on this one, it's correct to do so, because I literally mean this poor kid was subjugated to all types of abuse by his father. His personal hell, he's forced to come face-to-face with his dad. But not only that, but it's more of like, there's a bed in the room, and you kind of put two and two together, and you're like, oh god, this poor kid. You know? And he, unfortunately, fails as well. He's unable to face what happened, to conquer his own personal demons, so to speak. And
it wasn't just his dad, though. Who else was in this flashback? It was the brother as well.
His own brother, but it didn't look like his brother anymore. You know, it was his brother, but it wasn't his brother. It was just a very dark and haunting version of him. Enough to strike terror into poor Brett. So not only was he dealing with his dad, he was dealing with a darker spirit version of his brother.
Well, not just that, if I remember right, too, not to cut you off, babe, but this is just, I think so. I'm like, maybe I'm wrong here, but I remember, too, that while the flashback, before the father even kind of came into play, the brother actually told Brett to go hide under the bed.
Yeah, because he was trying to protect Brett from their father.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was willing to take the physical abuse from his father just to protect his younger brother from all the other kind of abuse.
Yeah, which also involved, you know, the infamous belt.
Yes.
But yes, you're right, though. He did fail it because, again, I think it's just because, you know, he was also afraid of the dad. On top of, he was so used to probably, you know, seeing his brother stand up for him, too, to take the physical abuse as well, just to protect him when he could.
Yes. And, you know, so it sucks. So, two down already. Two
down and two to go.
Yep, two down, two to go. So, the next one up was Chris. So, basically, it was Chris's turn to go upstairs. He was all ready and everything, got upstairs, got on the phone with Edith, gets pulled into his own personal hell, which his own personal hell involves an old flame. You know, a girlfriend. Chris was in the car talking to his old flame, and they were talking about the fact that she was pregnant and that they needed to tell their parents and this and that. And he's all like, let's wait to tell them. We don't need to tell them right now. You know, let's get through this and then we can tell them. And his girlfriend was more persistent. She's like, we really should tell them, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of. We're in love, blah, 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 blah. And Chris kept dismissing her feelings. So they get done with the conversation. They go off. And it shows her getting into the car and driving off. And then it flashes forward, and this is where it becomes a nightmare for Chris. He finds his girlfriend's an unborn child got into a car crash, and they crashed into a tree. And we're talking, this car got completely wrecked and totaled. Nobody's walking away from it. So they died. So Chris blames himself for it because his girlfriend, who was pregnant with his unborn child, left so upset and so distraught that, if I had to guess, most certainly resulted in the car crash. She probably was just so completely, like, emotional and beside herself that she completely just lost control of the car and resulted in the unfortunate event. So, that's... So, after that, we get this twisted, contorted version of his girlfriend that shows up in this, like, entity form. And she's chasing after him, and she's like all twisted up, which I would think is like a symbolism for her getting wrecked in the car crash. So it's like a symbolic reference or whatever you would want to call it. So she's chasing him, and then they get to a point where she's not all like disturbing and contorted and menacing anymore. She's beautiful. She's sweet. She's loving. She's, oh, I miss you. I love you. This and that. And she proceeds to tell Chris what, babe?
That he need to get to the phone, and that she basically knows where to go.
That's right. So, Chris's girlfriend.
Yeah.
gives him the information that the others were not given. How to escape their personal hells. How to get out. The phone. You have to go back to the phone. You have to find the phone. That is your way out of here. That is your only way out of here. So Chris goes, he finds the phone, and he is the first one to come back from that phone call. Lasted a minute and came back from that phone call. He was the only one that survived it so far. So what does Chris try to go do, babe?
Tried to go warn
Tanya.
Yes.
Which, unfortunately, that
does not work well.
No, no. They end up the house ends up playing a dirty trick on them.
Yep.
And think of this house kind of sort of like a twisted version or a dark version of a fun house, where you know random doors open and shut. And different pathways are opened up and things like that. So when Chris goes to try to tell Tanya about the phone, one door opens to have Tanya go off into another part of the house.
And shuts behind her. Yeah.
And shuts behind her. And Chris goes back down into the living room where he was hoping to find Tanya but doesn't and gets shut in there.
Exactly.
It's, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, which is kind of brilliant, that it's almost like the house knew what was going to happen.
And, exactly what I was going to say. It's like the house knew.
Yeah. And I will say that at this point in time, there's actually a really cool trick in this, too, when Chris went to try to warn Tanya, where we see this, like, sheet that it almost looks like somebody is hiding underneath the sheet, sitting in a chair, which Chris kind of notices. But then as Chris went to go and investigate, it like fell, collapsed on itself into the chair, as if like there was a spirit, which I want to say it was actually Wen Shea's character, almost like provoking him by saying, like, I saw what you were up to.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was a nice little metaphor of saying, basically saying, like, I'm watching what you all do.
It's like you're not gonna throw like a wrench into my plans, you know, and screw everything up. You know, I want my vengeance, you know, and I'm gonna do whatever I need to get it.
Yeah. So eventually, Chris does make his way back up to where Tanya is. You know, supposedly making the call, or at least trying to, but, so basically, he goes into this other room, where basically where Tanya is, because it involved this weird, grungy area as well, grungy looking is what I should say, with like a radio or TV.
Old TV.
Yeah, and this is when Tobin Bell comes back in, which, did you ever figure out why he came back?
Because he discovered that Chris and Tanya were in a different part of the house together. And that Tanya had not gone upstairs to make her call. And that Chris somehow escaped from his own personal hell. So he was kind of pulling like an intervention type of thing, like, oh no, we're gonna fix this like right now.
Yeah, but that kind of falls short as Chris gets a hold of a rifle and shoots Edward or Tobin Bell's character, and which causes basically
thus extinguishing his life.
Yes, and that's when, again, where the house kind of magically brings it back so that now Tanya has to answer the phone. But I think we're forgetting to mention, too, that every time that these people or troublemakers, you know, pick up the phone or even before it, like, physically going into the next dimension, Winshay's character is seen a couple times, either from the mirror itself or just a quick glimpse of her behind them before they think, before they even realize what's going on, really. I think it was Zach that first noticed, like as he was trying to get up, he saw himself still holding on to the phone, and I think that's when he basically was just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, exactly. So, I was kind of, I'm going to say this real quick, I was kind of disappointed at the fact that they killed off Tobin Bell's character, Edward, like they did. I was expecting a little bit more fight from him.
But yeah, I know what you're trying to say. Like, especially for losing his wife, you'd think his character would have done a little bit more to help fulfill the quest of his, you know, dead wife in the movie. But it's almost like it was like a double-edged sword for both Edith and Edward. And even when Tobin Bell died, you would have thought that, okay, now maybe he might be one with Edith now, and they could actually, you know, turn the two, Chris and Tanya, into like a really, really hellish nightmare. But we didn't really get that. And if anything, we didn't ever see Tobin Bell's character again. We only saw Winshay's character. So that's another deduction to me. It's like, really? Like, there could have been so much more with, like, a perfect couple, like, revenge in the unknown form like this. And I think, before I forget this, so the reason why the phone is involved so much was because this was Tobin Bell's way of always contacting his wife, basically. It was always his form of speaking to her. And even before, when Shay's character passed away from offing herself, they were into this occult thing of, if either of them passed on first, that they would use that phone to contact them, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I actually liked how they used the phone in the movie as a means between the living to make contact between the living and the dead.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, honestly, like, the ending itself was just like, this was it. Like,
I will say this though, because I don't know if we should touch on Tanya a little bit, because her role in this film with Edith is crucial.
A lot. Oh yeah.
Very crucial. So Tanya is truly a huge part of it. She's the whole reason why Edith was bullied and tormented by everyone. It was all Tanya's fault. Because Tanya's sister, Laura, went missing after she was at the Cranston daycare. It was her birthday. She had received a locket from Edith as a gift. She was on her way home with her sister Tanya and talking about how, look what Edith gave me. Isn't it beautiful? And this and that. And oh God, you could just see the jealousy and the hatred in Tanya's eyes. It was just, she's so cold towards her sister. Yeah. Like, she was just full of jealousy and envy. And so she's like, they're walking across this bridge and she knocks her sister and kills her. Kills Laura and throws her bike off of the bridge and tries to make it look like it was Edith's fault. That it was all Edith. So that she wouldn't get in trouble and she would become Daddy's favorite and Daddy's little girl and this and that. And Tanya was truly, truly evil. Like, this was one of those films where I obviously sympathized more with Edith and Edward Cranston, more so Edith, because she was done dirty. Like, she was done dirty to the highest degree. And she did not deserve what happened to her. But I will say this. Tanya deserved every bit of what she got.
Oh, and then some. Oh, yes.
I was more pleased by the fact that Tanya got her just desserts in the end. Than I was by anybody else who was taken by their personal hells. Hers was my favorite because I was like, finally, it's basically like save the best for last, save this bitch for last, because this bitch right here, she deserves every single thing that she's about to get. And you're just going to sit there and you're just going to relish in it because you're just going to be like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, and this is why Edward wanted her last, basically.
Yeah, because she was the cause of all their misery.
Oh, yeah. But every single person played into it, into her hellish nightmare as well.
Yeah. Each person that didn't survive their own personal hell became a part of Tanya's. Tanya was reunited with them all in the end. Even her sister, Laura.
Oof.
Which, yeah, I will say again, just desserts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, babe, what are your final thoughts on the call?
My final thoughts on the call is basically it's not the greatest movie and it's not bad. It's like in the middle. And it's a shame because you have, like we talked in the beginning, it's two great actors, like two actors that we all talked about, like basically like these two need to be in a movie together. And then we finally get that chance and it's just like, and this was it. Like I don't know, like I expected more. I would have loved to have seen more. I'm not really sure in which way, but after talking about it more, I do agree with Tessa that I wish that Tobin Bell's character had a little bit more oops to make the, you know, the standoff, like, better, I guess, rather than just what happened. I mean, I understand Tobin Bell's himself is up there in age, so he probably can't do too much stunt work, but then again, that's what stunt doubles are for. And even if you had somebody do like a green suit, you could just easily just, you know, edit Tobin Bell's character into that. So I don't know, I just kind of wish there were definitely a little bit more. And I definitely wish there was a little bit more with Wen Shea's character. Just a little bit. Like, before she just decided to off herself. But otherwise, I like the idea with the whole phone between communicating with the living and the dead. Edward, their way of staying in touch before, well, Edward got shot off and never seen again. But I guess everybody got what they deserved, I would say. I mean, Chris, not so much. Like, he really just was just in the bad crowd at the wrong time, really. But it was still quite interesting to see his personal hell.
Yes. So, here's my final thoughts on the film. And by the way, I also did write a review for this film on our site.
DHpodcast.com. Yep.
Yes. So, if you want to hear more about my, if you want to read my whole review on that, check it out. So, here's my final thoughts for the film. Yes, I will agree with Paul about the fact that the film wasn't a total bust. It wasn't lackluster because of, I'm going to say it wasn't lackluster because of Tobin Bell and Lynn Shay's appearances in the film. Their acting, it has nothing to do with them.
No.
I wish that there was more that they could have done with the asshole teens, you know, or at least done a little bit more with the played a little bit more with the atmosphere of the Cranston house.
Yeah.
I will also say that I wish that there was more of Lynn Shay and Tobin Bell together in this film, participating together. You know, wreaking havoc, getting vengeance together against these teens. Even after Tobin Bell was, like, killed by Chris, I wanted him to, like, come back like Lynn Shay and just go after the kids. I wanted to see that darker aspect of him that I saw in Lynn Shay's character in this film. I wanted to see them do it together. And we didn't see that. So, Paul and I, we were kind of a little bummed about that. Because we were looking for a better twist to the film. And we were thinking, well, maybe since they killed him, maybe he'll come back as like this, like, vengeful ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen. So we were both kind of bummed about that. But other than that, overall, the performances of Lynn Shay and Tobin Bell were great. And the story wasn't terrible, although it had its strong points and it had its weak points.
That's why it makes me wonder if we could have possibly just had one more writer, if what that could have done for it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm also curious what that could have possibly done for the story.
Yeah, and I guess that just wraps up the call with Lynn Shay and Tobin Bell, unfortunately.
So, what Paul and I will say is that if you are fans of Tobin Bell and Lynn Shay, and you're curious just to see how they appear in a film together, watch The Call.
Yeah,
because this is the... At least do it for that, because this is the only film so far that these two are in together.
Yes.
We have looked to see if they have been in anything else together, and they have not. So I would, Paul and I would both agree that view it just for the sake of that.
Yes.
And that concludes our discussion on The Call.
That is right. And I believe you can actually watch The Call on Netflix, and if not Netflix, it was Tubi. I know it was one of those.
Shudder.
Oh, Shudder.
Yep, it was on Shudder.
So, well, it was one of those platforms.
So, if you have access to Shudder, we would recommend that you watch it.
Even if you get a free trial for like a week.
Yeah, even if you get like a free trial for a week.
Yeah, because I mean, we watched quite a bit on there, and there's another film I would love to talk about. I just feel like I would just need to rewatch it, and unfortunately, our trial is up. So yeah. Anyway, that's another discussion for next time. But anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed the call because, well, hopefully it could have been a lot better, which, as you probably saw with the title of this episode, it's The Call featuring Wynn Shea and Tobin Bell and what happened. Because really, like, what... Why, like, what happened to this? Like, what why would you throw these two actors, actor and actress in, and then just have this okay storyline? Like, really? Like, I'm surprised they even both wanted to agree to do it, but I bet they were like, you know, like us, like Tessa and I were just saying, people would love to see Wynn Shea and Tobin Bell together. So they figured, well, I'm a fan of her work, and Tobin would probably like, and I like her work, and we would make a good movie together. And it's just like, well, crap.
So that concludes our discussion. I was Tessa Baker.
And I was Paul Dolsky.
And remember to
stay
scary.